Hard to explain the remedial or very basic process for curing the material disease. First, one has to understand the nature of the material disease. It's actually so nicely described in that verse from the 13th chapter, Purusha Prakriti Sto Hi, 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. How the living entity is situated, thinking that he is the enjoyer, situated within the realm of Prakriti, the material world. And Bhungte Prakriti Janiha, he is trying to enjoy those things produced of matter. Karanam, because of this, Guna Sangasya, he comes in contact with the three modes of material nature and they capture him. And the result of that is sada sat joni janmasu, birth after death after birth after death. And it stems, this experience stems from his desire to enjoy. And how is that desire to enjoy expressed? It's expressed through fruit of work within this world. One works to get something so he can enjoy. So, to change our situation within matter, one has to work, because one can't avoid work. But one has to stop working with a fruitive motive to enjoy, and rather one should work for Krishna. So Narada Muni explained this, that thing, work, which causes our entanglement in the material world has to be therapeutically treated. And what was the example that he gave? Practically speaking, what was in Prabhupada's purport? Yogurt. Yes, milk or yogurt. Milk and yogurt are the same thing. One causes an overindulgence of milk may cause some dysentery. But then, the cure for that same disease, or the disease that was caused by milk, is milk again, but in a different form, in the form of yogurt or curd. So, similarly, work with a fruitive motive causes our entanglement in matter, and work without a fruitive motive for Krishna's pleasure will disentangle us from matter, will cure the very disease that work has caused. So Narada described this to Srila Vyasadeva, and he explained that while one works, one should constantly remember the Lord, because it is for Krishna. Chaitasya sava kamani maya sanyasima para. It is for Krishna that we're working, so naturally when we're working for Krishna, we should think about Krishna, naturally. And therefore, he explains that we should always think about Krishna and chant the names of Vasudev, Pradyumna, Nibhuda, etc. Shankarshan. Then he describes that the Lord is no different from his sound vibration. So in chanting the Lord's names, one is associating with him. And therefore, he tells Narada, Narada tells Vyas, therefore you should describe this Bhagavatam because place it in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You should write the Srimad Bhagavatam that is full of Krishna's pastimes, of the activities, the glories, the qualities, the names of the Lord. And therefore, when the living entity contacts this Bhagavatam, he will contact the Lord. So that ends the fifth chapter of the first canto. Then, right in the beginning of the next chapter, the sixth chapter, Sutta Goswami continues his explanation, because remember in the fourth chapter, this sages headed by Shonaka asked Sutta about how Vyasadeva, what inspired him, what was his inspiration to write this Bhagavatam. So he's answering this. And remember how also in the fourth chapter we heard of Vyasadeva's despondency even after doing so much work, compiling so many Vedic literatures. And now Then Narada came and began to instruct him, and this is what how Narada instructed him. And he told how he himself, by contacting the Bhaktivedantas, that he himself, although just a poor son of a maidservant, by serving them, they were merciful to him and they instructed him. And before they left, they gave him that confidential knowledge. Because they were with him only during the Chaturmasya, the 4 months of the rainy season, when the sadhus are stationary, stay in one place. So, then, Vyasadeva, after Narada describes this, what we've just heard, the verses that we've just heard yesterday, and what we've just summarized just now, Vyasadeva begins to ask Narada some more questions. And the questions in text 2, what did you do after the departure of the sages? Because the sages, the Bhaktivedantas, had given Srila Vyasadeva confidential knowledge. He had gained a taste for Krishna Katha and devotional service, and then they left. So what did he do next? Did he forget everything and just go back to being the son of a maidservant? What happened? How did you react to this association when you were free from it? Because Vyasadeva wants to know all these things because he's interested in following the footsteps of Narada Muni. So he wants to know more details of what had happened so that he could follow. Then he asks, in text 3, how did you pass your life after initiation, after getting this knowledge from them? How did you pass your life? What did you do? And then, how did you attain this spiritual body of Narada Muni? How did you die, and how did you attain the birth as Narada Muni, this great exalted birth? And then in the fourth verse, he asks, you've told me now, you've just told me about what had happened in your previous life, which was actually before the day of Lord Brahma. So it was millions and millions and millions of years ago. Now in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which Srila Vyasadeva knew very well because he compiled it, Krishna tells Arjuna that millions of years ago he instructed the Bhagavad Gita to whom? To Vivaswan. And Vivaswan instructed it to Manu to Ichaku, like this. And what does Arjuna do when he hears that? He said, how is that possible? You're only 125 years old or so. And how is it possible that you instructed the sun god who is millions and millions of years older than you? And Krishna says, many, many births you have passed, but I can remember them, but you cannot. So if Arjuna couldn't remember his previous births, of course Krishna can. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and time and everything is under his control. That remembrance is under his control. But Arjuna couldn't remember his previous births. So Vyasadeva is asking, how is it that Narada Muni can remember his previous birth, which was so long ago, in the previous day of Lord Brahma? How is this, which happened prior to this day of Brahma, how is it that it is still fresh in your memory, undisturbed by time? So after asking these three questions, how did you remember what occurred in a prior day of Brahma? How did you attain the body of Narada? What happened when you die? How did you attain this body, spiritual body? And what happened after initiation and after you, the Bhaktivedantas, left you and you were bereft of their association? How did you pass your life? So Vyasa asked these very pointed questions. And Sri Narada started to describe the answers to those questions in text. It begins in text 5. The great sages who had imparted scientific knowledge of transcendence to me departed for other places, and I had to pass my life in this way. I was the only son of my mother, so he was an only child, who was not only a simple woman, but a maidservant as well. He had no father present. And since I was her only offspring, she had no other alternative for protection. So what happens when someone depends on us for protection? What is the result of that? Yes, we become very attached to them. Actually, we'll hear this in the 13th chapter of the first canto, how Sanjay was dependent on Dhritarashtra, because in the 13th chapter Dhritarashtra leaves home, and Yudhisthira was being depended upon by Dhritarashtra. And out of the two, the one who was dependent and the one who was being depended upon, the one who is being depended upon, in that case it was Yudhisthira Maharaj, will be more attached. So Prabhupada has many times said how the father is more attached to the son than the son is to the father. So Narada, even though he was a young boy, he was very responsible, and his mother depended upon him completely. So because of that, and because of her dependence, and also because of her love for him being her only son, her only child, he was bound up. So the Bhaktivedantas left, and he had to remain due to his being bound up with his relationship with his mother. But he wanted to leave. He wanted to leave home. He wanted to practice spiritual life. And he just waited. And what did he wait for? He waited for Krishna to make an arrangement. And as soon as Krishna made an arrangement, he immediately jumped very quickly. When Krishna opened the door, he did not hesitate, he just went through it. She wanted to look after my maintenance properly, but because she was not independent, she was not able to do anything for me. The world is under the full control of the Supreme Lord, therefore everyone is like a wooden doll in the hands of a puppet master. When I was a mere child of 5 years old, how old are you? Bhima, how old are you? 12. And how old is this the next version? Excuse me? 8, okay. Narada was 5. When I was a mere child of 5 years old, now just imagine, which are any of the children in the community? 5? I think Wabi is just 4. Yeah? He's not 5. How old is Devi Shri? Five. So that age. I lived in a Brahmana school. I was dependent on my mother's affection and had no experience of foreign lands, of different lands. He was just, all he knew was his mother and just the neighborhood, just typically for a five-year-old child. Once upon a time, my poor mother, when going out one night to milk a cow, was bitten on the leg by a serpent, influenced by supreme time. I took this as the special mercy of the Lord, who always desires benedictions for his devotees, and so thinking, I started for the north. So Narada, although never, ever, ever wishing any ill for his mother, one day, by the action of time, his mother was bitten by a snake, and she died. And there he was, a fully dependent 5-year-old who didn't know anything about foreign lands, He didn't know anything about anything. He was just a child. But yet, he recognized this as Krishna. That which would be the most horrible of occurrences, because he was an exalted personality, already advanced in spiritual life, he recognized Krishna's hand in this. The door had opened in this form, and he walked through. He started for the north. Here's Prabhupada's purports to texts 9 and 10. That is the way of dragging a sincere soul nearer to God. What is the strongest word in that sentence? Dragging. Even a sincere soul needs to be dragged, it seems. What to speak of insincere souls? The poor boy was being looked after only by his affectionate mother, and yet the mother was taken from the world by the supreme will in order to put him completely at the mercy of the Lord. Now, this is what we're dealing with. When Krishna wants to put someone completely at his mercy, he does it in any way he likes. Sometimes it's a very frightening thought, after all. He can do anything he likes. He's the Supreme Lord. So in the short term, it may be disastrous. But in the long term, it is the most glorious. It is the most glorious and greatest fortune if Krishna drags us at time kicking and screaming to his lotus feet, resisting. Purport to 10. Confidential devotees of the Lord see in every step a benediction, direction of the Lord. In every step they see Krishna's mercy. That means in the bad steps and all the unfortunatenesses that fill our life, the difficulties. To hold on to Krishna's feet and see his mercy in that. What is considered to be an odd or difficult moment in the mundane sense is accepted as special mercy of the Lord. And Prabhupada is writing this not as just a theoretician. Prabhupada lived in a very difficult world, and he was practiced in seeing Krishna's mercy in everything. Mundane prosperity is a kind of material fever. And by the grace of the Lord, the temperature of this material fever is gradually diminished, and spiritual health is obtained step by step. Mundane people misunderstand it. How do mundane people misunderstand it? What do they misunderstand?
I think that God gives more material stuff.
Huh?
I think that God is giving them more gifts.
And they think that's God's grace.
Yeah.
And that what, when a devotee loses everything, they think, boy, the last thing I want to be is a devotee. Look what happened to the Pandavas. Kunti Devi is going to speak about this in chapter 8. In an incredible way. Her prayers are incredible. Viprashantu tatshashvad tatra tatra jagat kuru. She's going to ask for more calamities. Is it some type of sadomasochism? Some extreme neurotic reaction? No. But the materialistic person, he cannot understand Krishna's dealing with his devotees or what the devotee is actually desiring. And when we are placed in difficult circumstances, that becomes our test. or attest, because our spiritual life, very often we tend to put it in reverse and try to move it backwards as quickly as possible in difficult circumstances. Okay, we can do that. Krishna won't let us go. He's got us on a rubber band. You know, so we try to move backwards and then boing, he pulls it, gives it a yank. This will be described later in this chapter today. We'll read that. So anyway, Narada saw this clearly as Krishna's mercy. He had actually been waiting for Krishna's sign of what to do to release him so he could put fully his attention on spiritual life. And when it happened, he saw it, he recognized it, and immediately acted. Text 11. After my departure, so this is what he did after the Bhaktivedantas left him. I passed through many flourishing metropolises, cities, towns, villages, animal farms, mines, agricultural lands, valleys, flower gardens, nursery gardens, natural forests. Very, very beautiful places. He just wandered towards the north. This is the business of a Pariprajakacharya, even though he was so young. He understood his business was to wander, completely dependent on Krishna's protection. It may sound very romantic and wonderful, but it is difficult, because Krishna doesn't always protect us according to our plan. He has his own desires, his own plan to make us hold on more tightly to his lotus feet. I passed through hills and mountains full of reservoirs of various minerals like gold, silver, and copper, and through tracts of land with reservoirs of water filled with beautiful lotus flowers. He saw the good, he saw the bad of life, he saw the opulence of life, he saw the disasters of life, because when one wanders, one sees everything. And as Markul, who was reading, described from one of the purports, how the duty of a person like this is to wander fearlessly, and one's mind becomes very strong and fixed in his dependence on Krishna, and thus his faith becomes strong because he sees Krishna's protection and Krishna's hand everywhere. It's easy to depend on so many artificial things, and actually they are like the will-o'-the-wisp, something that truly doesn't exist. Our material security is really just illusion. Prashanapina pashyati, our dependence on the fallible soldiers of the people who we depend on. Actually, we're fully dependent on Krishna and no one else. But to grab that tightly with nothing else is a great challenge. And great exalted devotees take that challenge. And that is the business of the wandering Pariprajaka mendicant. I then passed through many forests of rushes, bamboos, reeds, sharp grass, weeds, and caves. And some of the caves that may have been what? Huh? Bears. What else? Sansu is expert on this topic. What are in the caves? Huh? Snakes. How big are they? Too big. Yes? How big? What kind of snakes? Python is there. What else? Spiders. Huh? Adi Baba, sounds horrible in the caves. What is the python compared to? Python. Huh? Python is Brahma Jyoti. the Sahasra Samhita, this is true. There's one verse that describes this. Sometimes the python is compared to sleep. So he visited deep, dark, and dangerous, fearful forests where there were great redback spiders just waiting to devour anyone who entered. Tigers roaring. They're terrifying. These animals are actually terrifying. When I remember years and years ago, a friend of mine took myself and my son to the zoo, and I remember seeing there these tigers and lions, and although they were caged, when they would roar, it was still terrifying because they have a specific potency. Even though they were caged, they're terrifying because they embody fearfulness. So even in those extremely fearful conditions, Narada wandered, although a young boy. I visited deep, dark, and dangerously fearful forests, which are the play yards of snakes, owls, and jackals. And in this purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions how the Parivrajakacharya has to build in his faith and strength in his mind. And in this day and age, one need not imitate the Parivrajakacharyas like Narada or Lord Chaitanya, who was the ideal, but rather one may sit down at some holy place and devote his whole time and energy to hear and repeatedly chant the holy scriptures left by the great acharyas, like the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. This is also mentioned in other places where Prabhupada says this is the practical vanaprastha. Not to go to any old forest and live and practice austerity, but to go to the forest known as Vrindavan. And there be fully engaged in hearing and chanting. So these, remember, these are the instructions on how to practice spiritual life, lived by Narada and meant for our example. So we should follow them. And therefore, Vyasadeva is specifically asking Narada what he did. Immediately after initiation, his life changed. And then he immediately took up spiritual life with complete seriousness. Text 14. Thus traveling, I felt tired. So one day, as he was traveling, he felt tired, both bodily and mentally. And I was both thirsty and hungry. So I took a bath in a river lake and also drank water. By contacting water, I got relief from my exhaustion. After that, under the shadow of a banyan tree, and asat, or people, this is a people tree actually, pipala upasta, he sat by the underneath a people tree, and he began to meditate upon the supersoul situated within, using his intelligence as he had learned from the liberated soul. So Prabhupada in his purport describes how one shouldn't meditate whimsically. We should follow the example of Narada and meditate according to the instructions of our spiritual master. We should fix our by proper use of one's trained intelligence. We should use that for meditating on the supersoul dwelling within every living being. This consciousness is firmly developed. How? That we have the ability to meditate fully on the supersoul. How is that developed? By a devotee who has rendered loving service unto the Lord by carrying out the orders of the spiritual master. So this develops the same consciousness that Narada had. Now, Narada sat down. We can imagine he had been traveling. Building up his strength, spiritual strength, following the instructions of these great acharyas, great teachers, the Bhaktivedantas. And then one day, while he was tired and thirsty, he refreshed himself by bathing and drinking the water of the cooling and refreshing water of a river, the lake within a river. And then underneath a peepal tree, a satbanin tree, he sat down and began to meditate. As soon as he began to meditate, and what did he meditate upon? The lotus feet of Krishna. His mind became transformed in transcendental love, and tears rolled down his eyes. And immediately, when bhakti manifested within his heart, he began to cry, and the Lord, Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, he manifests within his heart. So how wonderful. By Krishna's causeless mercy, he manifests within the heart of Narada. Now this is the result of following the process. Prabhupada explains the entirety of the process in his purport from beginning to end. We'll hear it. The word bhava is significant. The first initial stage is called shraddha, or liking for the Supreme Lord. We usually translate shraddha as faith. And in order to increase that liking, one has to associate with pure devotees of the Lord. So we've seen this is what happened with Narada. He was already qualified. And then, to increase and focus his qualification, he associated with the Bhaktivedantas. The third stage is to practice the prescribed rules and regulations of devotional service. So one has to follow their instructions, the sadhana that they prescribe. So Narada did that upon leaving home. And this, the result of that, is anartina vittisyat. This would dissipate all sorts of misgivings and remove all personal deficiencies that hamper progress in devotional service. Then one can perform nishtita bhakti, fixed, firm devotional service. When all misgivings and personal deficiencies are removed, there is a standard faith in transcendental matter. So that's the stage of nishtha. And the taste for it increases in greater proportion. Then one, after one is free from anarthas and one is fixed, then one can get a taste or ruchi. This stage or ruchi leads to attraction or asakti. And after this, after attraction, where one can't live a moment without being in association with Krishna, then there is bhava, or the prior stage of unalloyed love for God. All the above different stages are but different stages of development of transcendental love, which is prema. Being so surcharged with transcendental love, there comes a strong feeling of separation. Separation is the fire that cooks the prema to make it fully manifest in all its potency. So, there comes a strong feeling of separation, which leads to eight different kinds of ecstasies. Tears from the eyes of a devotee is an automatic reaction. And because Sri Narada Muni in his previous birth attained that stage very quickly after his departure from home, it was quite possible for him to perceive the actual presence of the Lord, which he tangibly experienced by his developed spiritual senses without material tangibles. So here, now in the next few verses, it's going to describe what he experienced. So all of a sudden, in great ecstasy, he was in ecstasy, and the Lord manifested his form in his heart. began to cry. Tears of loving devotion flowed from his eyes.
Text 17.
O Vyas, Narada is describing, at that time, being exceedingly overpowered by feelings of happiness, every part of my body became separately enlivened. Prabhupada explains in his purport that how can one describe ecstasy such as this? It is very difficult to describe it, because how can one describe it to one who hasn't experienced it? It's like saying, the example that Prabhupada gave trying to describe spiritual life is, raise your hand if you've tasted jackfruit, katal. So many people, jackfruit. Yeah, so it has two different stages of tasting. One is when it is kacha, then it's a fruit. When it's not mature yet, it's a fruit. And then when it's paka, when it's ripe, then it's a vegetable. And when it's a fruit, it has a particular taste. Now, how can I describe? I've tasted it. How can I describe what it tastes like? So Prabhupada gave the example of one Englishman years ago who asked the Bengali man, what does jackfruit taste like? And he said, it's like taking, like drinking sugarcane juice through a Muslim's beard. Strained through a Muslim's beard. Now that doesn't make it sound very attractive, does it? When I tasted it, it tasted to me like something like bubble gum, some combination of bubble gum mango or something, I don't know. But what does jackfruit taste like? It tastes like jackfruit. So if you want to taste it, you have to taste it. You can't just hear about it. But Narada is describing to us here what his ecstasy is like. So he's saying, every part of his body became separately enlivened. This is wonderful. Each one of his senses, individually and separately, wanted and longed to serve Krishna. Individually. His tongue, eyes, skin, everything became fully, ecstatically desiring to serve Krishna, independently of each other. Being absorbed in an ocean of ecstasy. An ocean of ecstasy. We've been in an ocean of salt water, most of us. Imagine what it would be like being absorbed in an ocean of ecstasy. When you're absorbed in an ocean of salt water, you become covered with salt. What would it be like to be covered with ecstasy? In that ecstasy, I could not see both myself and the Lord. He was drowning and lost within it. Not that he lost his individuality, but in his ecstasy, he could not see any separation between himself and the Lord. Because he was fully absorbed in loving devotion to the Lord. Text 18. So first he described that the Lord appeared. Then he describes his ecstasy, his feeling. Then, the transcendental form of the Lord, as it is, satisfies the mind's desires. And it erases all mental incongruities. We are seeking in our life different forms that will satisfy us. But actually no material form can satisfy us because we are spiritual, we are not material. We are souls. And we are longing actually, although we long for form that will satisfy us, but actually the form that will satisfy us is only Krishna. So Narada had that within his heart. So no difficulties existed in his consciousness, and his mind and heart were fully satisfied.
But then the Lord disappeared from his heart.
He came by his free will and he left. It is like someone giving you $1 billion and suddenly from you're a poor man who's always desired to be wealthy and suddenly you have $1 billion for a few moments and then the person comes and takes it away again. Upon losing that form, Narada says, I suddenly got up. He was meditating. He suddenly got up, being disturbed. As is usual, when one loses what is desirable, he was so upset he lost that thing which is most wonderful. Krishna was within his heart. He was bathing in the ecstasy of his association and suddenly it was gone. Krishna disappeared from his heart. Immediately his meditation broke. He got up disturbed. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? He wanted to search it out. Where is Krishna? What a shock. Text 19. I desire to see again that transcendental form of the Lord. But, so in other words, he sat down again, naturally. He got up. Where is Krishna? And then he said, well, I know how I got him to come into my heart the last time. How was that? I sat down under the tree and began meditating, so I'm going to do the same thing. So he began to concentrate again on the form of the Lord in the heart. With great eagerness, he wanted to view that form again, but he could not see him anymore, and thus dissatisfied, he was very aggrieved. They're very upset. Here's Srila Prabhupada's purport. There is no mechanical process to see the form of the Lord. It completely depends on the causeless mercy of the Lord. We cannot demand the Lord to be present before our vision, just as we cannot demand the sun to rise whenever we like. The sun rises out of his own accord. So also the Lord is pleased to be present out of his causeless mercy. One should simply await the opportune moment and go on discharging his prescribed duty in devotional service of the Lord. Narada Muni thought that the Lord could be seen again by the same mechanical process which was successful in the first attempt. But in spite of his utmost endeavor, he could not make the second attempt successful. The Lord is completely independent of all obligation. He can simply be bound up by the tie of unalloyed devotion. Nor is he visible or perceivable by our material senses. When he pleases, being satisfied with the sincere attempt of devotional service, depending completely on the mercy of the Lord, then he may be seen out of his own accord. So Narada was heartbroken. He had attained that most valuable treasure. He lost it. He tried again and realized that it was not his endeavor that had brought the Lord to his heart. There was nothing he could do except depend on Krishna. Seeing Narada's attempt in that lonely place, the personality of Godhead, who is transcendental to all mundane descriptions, spoke to me. In the middle of the forest, suddenly Narada heard the Lord's voice, which is no different from the Lord. He spoke with gravity and pleasing words just to mitigate, remove Narada's grief. We can just imagine how disturbed Narada was. And this is what he said. Please repeat. Hantasmin janmani bhava.
Hantasmin janmani bhava.
Mamam Mamam drashtum ivaharti. Iva avi pakva kashayanam. Dudasho ham kuyogina. Hantasmin janmani bhava. Oh dear, oh Narada, oh my dear one. Hantasmin janmani bhavan. That, oh my dear Narada, you will namam drashtam ivaharti. How to tell you this, but you do not, arhati means deserve. You do not deserve to see me again in this life. Namam drashtum. Drashta is see. Namam. You cannot see me again, janmani, in your life. Why? The Lord is so cruel. You can't see me? You're not qualified to see me in this life? He's given him, shown him himself. And then he disappears and says, you will not see me anymore in this life. First he explains why. Explains avipakva, that word like pukka as we use. Avipakva means you are not pukka, you are not mature, you're immature still. Kashayana means that you still have some impurities in your heart. Avipakva kashayana dudarshoham. Therefore, because I'm so difficult to see, you cannot see me. Kuyogina, there is still immaturity in your serving mood. So immaturity in serving mood, loving serving mood, not enough love in the heart for Krishna, and still impurity is also present. So I regret to say that you cannot see me again in this life. So what is that kasyayanam, Prabhupada explains in the purport. The result is exhibited by the signs of being freed from kam, lust, and lobe, covetousness. So the kasya, this is the amalam, or malam. This is the effects of passion and ignorance in the heart. That means lust and covetousness. What is covetousness? Lobe. It means covetousness, or greed, or even envy. Envy of something that someone has, and one is greedy for it. One must be freed from the desire for sense satisfaction and avarice for sense gratification. The balanced mode of nature is goodness. And to become completely free from all material tinges is to become free from the mode of goodness also. So one must first get rid of the lower modes of material nature to see Krishna, and then one must get rid of the highest mode of material nature, goodness, and be fully and simply fixed in Krishna's service. So Narada, to achieve this, he left and went to the forest, which is considered in the mode of goodness. And Prabhupada explains in his purport that better than the forest, which is in the mode of goodness, is the temple, which is transcendental, because in the temple the Lord can be worshipped in the archana form. So in the archana form, by developing the serving mood to the deity, the devotees develop their transcendental consciousness. So this is especially recommended, as Prabhupada explains, for the neophyte. But for the advanced devotee, as Narada did, the recommendation is traveling and preaching, because he can manifest transcendental consciousness by his preaching, and thereby he can convert others. And what is his activity as he's traveling and preaching? hearing and chanting continuously. So Prabhupada explains, a pure devotee of the Lord therefore follows in the footsteps of the great devotees like Narada and Prahlad and engages his whole time in glorifying the Lord by the process of kirtan. Such a preaching process is transcendental to all material qualities. Thus, by always preaching means kirtanam, one remains fixed always in the transcendental realm. But one has to come to that platform. That's for the more advanced souls. So that's why he couldn't see him again in this life. Avipakva kashayanam dadashoham kuyogina. But why did he appear then? Why did he appear if he was unqualified to see him? Why did the Lord appear in his heart? So then, the Lord says in text 22, Sakrit means once only, O virtuous one, you have only once seen my person, and this is just to increase your desire for me. So he gave Narada a glimpse of him, because then Narada simply would be thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking and desiring and desiring and desiring to have that back. And that would purify him. Prabhupada explains in his purport. A living being cannot be vacant of desires. He is not a dead stone. He must be working, thinking, feeling, and willing. So it is natural. No one can avoid desiring. And desires push us to work. And the work, if selfishly oriented, as our desires, if selfishly oriented, they entangle us in the material world. And it's impossible to stop working. It's impossible to stop desiring. But when he thinks, feels, and wills materially, he becomes entangled. And conversely, when he thinks, feels, and wills for the service of the Lord, he becomes gradually freed from all entanglement. The more a person is engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, the more he acquires a hankering for it. That is the transcendental nature of godly service. Material service has satiation. You've had enough. Whereas spiritual service of the Lord has neither satiation nor end. One can continuously increase his desires. One can go on increasing his hankerings for the loving transcendental service of the Lord, and yet he will not find satiation or end. By intense service of the Lord, one can experience the presence of the Lord transcendentally. Therefore, seeing the Lord means being engaged in his service, because his service and his person are identical. So to perceive that, one needs pure consciousness. The sincere devotee should go on with sincere service of the Lord. The Lord will give proper direction as to how and where it has to be done. There was no material desire in Narada, and yet, just to increase his intense desire for the Lord, he was so advised. And how easily we trade away our desires for Krishna for petty sense pleasures and so many things. This is the nature of Maya. But Narada was already on the stage by that glimpse. The Lord wanted to turn up the heat of his separation and increase his desire to be with him. Because that service is so potent. How potent? By service of the absolute truth, even for a few days, a devotee attains firm and fixed intelligence in me. So this journey that we're hearing about with Narada, This may take a soul many, 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 many lives. But the nature of this transcendental devotional service is that every bit we gain is eternal and is put, so to speak, in our bank account, our transcendental bank account. And when one is fully mature, when one has done enough service, when one's consciousness has been purified enough and fixed in the serving mood, then he becomes ultimately free from the material world and an eternal inhabitant of the spiritual world. So therefore, consequently, he goes on to become my associate. So this is what the Lord is describing, that either quickly or slowly, through devotional service, it has a start. Even for a few days, it's an eternal start. And what is the end? He goes to become the associate of the Lord in the transcendental world after giving up the present deplorable material worlds. Therefore, intelligence engaged in my devotion cannot be thwarted at any time. In other words, if one makes the attempt in devotional service, he is there already. He is in Goloka Vrindavan already. But time separates him from that. So why not go quicker, is the admonition. Once the start is made, one will end up there in Golok. Because it is lost. It is never lost. And it will, Krishna will send circumstances. Just like one may have a little devotional service under his spiritual belt, and then he tries to avoid it, and then he's wandering and he walks into some restaurant, and suddenly Krishna's hand comes out and goes, picks him up, says, "Where have you been? I've been missing you. Come back." Plucks you right out. So here's the answer to the question of how did Narada remember this from his previous birth? Because the Lord says to him, even at the time of creation, as well as in the time of annihilation, your remembrance will continue by my mercy. So even if our remembrances don't continue, the devotion still does. But Narada here is getting that benediction, and therefore he can remember. Then that supreme authority, after describing this to Narada, first appearing, disappearing, explaining why he appeared and then disappeared to increase his desire, and then explaining the potency of devotional service, that it's a continuum that can develop birth after birth after birth until one is mature, and it ends with personal association, personal service of Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan. Then the Lord, that supreme authority, personified by sound. What does that mean, personified by sound? That means that when we chant Krishna's names persistently, as Prabhupada says in the purport, we can actually associate with Krishna. So that Lord, who is personified by sound, that means he was present as Narada was talking, or hearing rather. He was hearing the Lord. He was actually experiencing the Lord, because the Lord and his sound vibration are the same. So the Lord, personified by sound and unseen by the eyes, but most wonderful, stopped speaking. Feeling a sense of gratitude, Narada said, I offered my obeisances unto him, bowing my head. He was already purified, but he wanted to increase it longer, increase it more. Even one could say, why didn't he immediately purify him? That's what your question more or less is. Why didn't he immediately purify him? After all, he was in his heart, like he did to Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj came to him with material desires, and then the Lord touched him upon the head and completely transcendentalized his body. And then he no longer had material desires. Why did the Lord do that? Why did the Lord do it one way with Dhruva Maharaj and another way with Prahlad Maharaj and another way with Narada? Because he's the Lord, he can do it as he likes. But in all these, there are instructions for us. So the instruction for us here is there's a gradual description of the process of devotion in Narada's life. From Shraddha to Prem is described in Narada's life. And this stage, where one has perhaps glimpsed the Lord, but is not fully connected to him, this is a stage that a soul has to go through. And that hankering, where one can't bear to be without the Lord for even a moment, that stage of purification also has to be gone through. So this is a description of the stages of devotion, and we've heard about it previously in the second chapter, the different stages of devotion. Now we're seeing it exemplified in the life of Narada. Krishna is very expert at doing the impossible. We should persistently chant Krishna's name, associate with him, fully depend on him. Problem is, we want that, but we don't want to pay the price. As soon as one wants to pay the price, then one can have it instantaneously. In that sense. That's what we're doing too. We're associating with Krishna through the Bhagavatam. Yeah, that's true. So the problem with, see, both are true. It takes many, many lives, and it can be done in one life. The problem is, if we emphasize the side that it takes many, many lives, we'll think, anyway, then why should I hurry if it's going to take so long anyway? And with that mood, we'll never get there at all, even after many, many, many lives. So, huh? But not if we don't. In other words, it could be the last one, it could be the. But it just matters how mature our consciousness is. So if we find that our consciousness is immature, but yet we want it to be our last life, then we have to go about the process. We have to know what the process is for bringing it to this stage of maturity. Because it doesn't happen unless we're mature. Sadatan bhava bharata. That means bhava has to be there.